The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now, at the end of this month, there's a major two-day conference taking place in Trinity. It's organised by the Trinity Long Room Hub in partnership with the Bar of Ireland, Dublin Cemeteries Trust and Diageo, entitled Liberty, Democracy and the Struggle for Human Rights. The focus of it is the great Daniel O'Connell, 250 years on from his birth. Patrick Egan, presenter of Talking History, is with me. Fans of the show and many of them out there will have listened to the special maybe at the weekend. But for those who didn't, Patrick, we're going to talk about the Liberator himself now for a few minutes. Does he get the recognition he deserves in this country?
I don't think so. I think in the 19th century, he was the giant of Irish history. But I think after the 1916 Rising and the War of Independence, I think he became a more marginalised figure then, because people got it into their heads. You either had to be a fan of that revolutionary movement or a fan of O'Connell, but you couldn't actually recognise them both. And De Valera, actually, as president, recognised that that was a mistake in the 1960s when he visited Derrynane and reopened Derrynane. He said that he had hated O'Connell growing up, and that the revolutionary generation had hated O'Connell, but he now realised they were wrong, because they would never have been able to achieve what they achieved if O'Connell hadn't raised an Irish people from their knees in the 19th century. So in many ways, he made possible the modern Ireland we have now.
So tell me a bit more about him, about his background, about where he came from, about his upbringing.
Well, he was born in Kerry 250 years ago. He was born into a country where the remaining penal laws meant that he couldn't be educated, so he had to travel to France. And he came back, and as the rules were eased off, he was able to become a barrister, and he became the greatest barrister in Irish history. But he was also an agitator and a campaigner, and he devoted three decades of his life to campaigning for Catholic emancipation. And I think that's probably part of the reason why he's not really celebrated or understood now, because I don't think we in the 21st century really know what Catholic emancipation meant. We think it's maybe something to do with religion, and we're a much more secular society. But I think probably the branding is wrong now. It should be called civil rights. He was fighting for civil rights for the majority of Irish people who were inferior in their own country, who weren't able to get promoted in the law. There were no Catholic judges. There were barriers put on people that couldn't enter Parliament, and people felt inferior in their own country. And what he did was he led a mass, peaceful, democratic movement, the first in the world, and he forced the British government to back down and concede these civil rights in 1829, and then moved on to campaign to restore the Irish Parliament. So for five decades, for 50 years, he was at the centre of the agitation for peaceful political change in Ireland.
And the Irish Parliamentary Party and ultimately the campaign for Home Rule, did the people involved in that, say from Parnell and onwards, did they see themselves as the descendants of the O'Connell tradition rather than the revolutionary heroes who came after?
I think there was a link there, because O'Connell even debated with Isaac Butt, because Isaac Butt in his earlier years was a unionist, and O'Connell had a big debate with him in Dublin, and afterwards they were criticising Butt, and O'Connell said, no, don't go too harsh on him. I was watching him and I think he'll be our ally in the future. So there is a link between O'Connell and then Butt and then Parnell. And I think there is a link then with the modern state that was created, the fact that we did have this democratic tradition, the fact that Ireland didn't succumb to dictatorship the way so many of the new states after World War One did, that we had this respect for the parliamentary tradition and for democracy and for oratory and great speech. And I think that owes a huge debt to O'Connell as well.
How was he viewed in his own time?
He was a controversial figure. To people in Britain, he was almost a Trumpian monster, a charlatan, someone who was conning the Irish people. To people on the continent, he was a great champion of freedom and liberty. In the United States, he was very divisive, because he was a huge opponent of slavery. So he was celebrated by the abolitionists. He was adored by the African Americans. Frederick Douglass escaped from slavery, loving the name of O'Connell, came to Dublin to meet his great hero. But then other groups in America hated O'Connell because they didn't like this Irishman telling them what they should be doing in their own country.
How did he view Ireland's relationship, or what he imagined Ireland's relationship could be with other countries in the world, or with Europe, for example? Did he see Ireland as a kind of a European country and himself as a European?
He definitely saw himself as a great European, and he saw our identity as being very much a European identity. And he very much influenced the development of democratic movements across the continent. In Belgium, when they had an actual election for their king, three parliamentarians voted for O'Connell. Charles de Gaulle, his grandmother wrote a biography of Daniel O'Connell, and it was de Gaulle's favourite book growing up. And when he resigned as president of the Fifth Republic, he went on his boat to Kerry, to Derrynan, and wrote in the visitor book in honour of the Liberator. And he had this huge reputation outside of Ireland as someone who championed democracy, freedom, liberty. When Jules Verne was writing 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, he included in Captain Nemo's stateroom portraits of all of the great figures of the century. You had Lincoln and you had Napoleon, but there you had Daniel O'Connell. Of course, when they translated the book into English, they left out Daniel O'Connell.
Wow, really? That's fascinating. That's really fascinating. Is that how Daniel O'Connell saw himself as a peer of those great men?
When children would come up to Daniel O'Connell, he would say, "Do you know who I am?" And if they didn't, he'd say, "I'm the person who won your freedom." And when journalists would ask him, who was the greatest figure in Irish history? He would say, "Henry Grattan," but then he'd say, "After myself." And he had, like, there was a downside to O'Connell. He had a monstrous ego. He was vain. He thought he was the dominant figure. He could be a bully. He could be very difficult to work with. He was terrible with money. He had all of these flaws, but he was more than the sum of his parts, because he came to channel this idea and epitomize this idea of freedom and democracy and liberty. And he was able to channel all of these strengths and weaknesses together, the sheer force of personality, into standing up to an unfair political system and demanding more, demanding it in the British Parliament, demanding it on platforms across the country, and using his power of words, his eloquence, his great training at the service of the Irish people.
And what was it about his approach to those campaigns that was ultimately successful?
I think it was the fact that he did something that no one had attempted before, which was to mobilise the ordinary people behind the movement. And he introduced the penny a month scheme in 1824. That was the equivalent of what Barack Obama did with crowdsourcing and crowdfunding in 2008. He had everyone contribute, from those who couldn't afford much paid a penny, those who could afford paid more, but everyone felt part of the movement. Before then, the movement was just for the well-off, the wealthy farmers, the wealthy business people. It was for the elite. O'Connell made it a movement for everyone, and everyone had a share in the movement. So when O'Connell stood for election in County Clare in 1828 and won, that was celebrated all across the country. Bonfires were lit on hills to telegraph the results across the island. People put O'Connell in a chair and carried him all the way to Limerick. People celebrated. And it wasn't because they thought their child was going to become a member of parliament or become a judge. It was because for the first time in their life, they thought they were finally equal in their own country.
What was his relationship, or how did he imagine Ireland's relationship with Britain?
I think he saw a good relationship, a close relationship. He admired the Queen, but he wanted Ireland to have its own parliament. He wanted Irish people to have their own say. And he knew that a calamity like the famine would never have occurred if Ireland had its own parliament. And he didn't want it to be a Catholic nation. He always made it very clear that people of any religion or no religion would be respected. That he didn't want a Catholic state. He once said, "I would as much take my orders from Constantinople as from Rome." He was going to be independent of the church. So sometimes O'Connell is associated with a kind of a very narrow kind of Catholic nationalism. And that was probably what happened after his death and the way the movement developed. But I think O'Connell would have been as uncomfortable with the way things went in the 1920s.
I know kind of historians like yourself probably hate when people like myself ask questions like this, the great what ifs of history. But I'll ask anyway. Let's imagine for a moment the campaign for the restoration of an Irish Parliament had been successful, and it had been shaped largely by Daniel O'Connell. You know, what in his mind would that relationship into the future with Britain have been? Would it have been as part still of the United Kingdom, but just with separate parliaments, kind of domestic affairs? Was it the kind of the dual monarchy? Would we be like the kind of Austro-Hungarians or something?
I think O'Connell was very radical in his younger years. As it went on, he became more conservative and cautious. And I suspect if it had been a repeal parliament in the 1840s, it wouldn't have differed very much, and he wouldn't have wanted complete separation. And he kind of had almost this boyish infatuation with Queen Victoria. But I think other successive generations would have pressed for greater reform. So I think under O'Connell, it would have been just a stepping stone. But I think under later generations, it would have gone further.
He would have lived through, 1798 and then the rebellions as well of the 19th century. The story we were all told in school about Daniel O'Connell's attitude to violence, the famous story was that, you know, he had this duel as a young man and he killed someone and he wore a glove on his hand forever and turned away and absolutely abhorred violence. He was a committed pacifist. How true was that?
See, there's elements, but I don't think he was a committed pacifist. He hated the mob violence of the French Revolution, but then he joined the United Irishmen in the 1790s and fled Dublin at the outbreak of the 1798 rebellion. And then after that, he hated the way the rebellion turned into infighting and atrocities and essentially war crimes. And he hated uncontrolled mob violence. Once, though, when he was 50 in 1825, a German visitor asked him, would you lead a rebellion if you were guaranteed it would succeed? And he said, oh, I'm almost afraid to consider that. So it went beyond the duel. He was certainly a much more aggressive man when he fought the duel in 1815, killed the man, challenged Robert Peel to another duel straight afterwards and was arrested. But afterwards, that began to weigh heavily on him. And he returned to the Catholic faith after that. He had lost his religion in London. And as time went on, the death began to weigh heavily on him. But even in his later years, during these massive monster meetings in 1843, he talked to the crowd about what would happen if they were invaded. And he said, we will set them at defiance. We will resist. So he wasn't someone who would have said if the country was invaded, oh, I'm a pacifist. We're not going to defend ourselves. He would have defended themselves in that case.
So I mentioned right at the outset that this is in partnership, this event with the Bar of Ireland. What was his reputation at the Bar as a lawyer?
Well, he was a brilliant lawyer, but he was a tormentor of the judges because all of the judges were Protestant ascendancy. No Catholic was able to get promoted even to becoming a what's now a senior counsel, then a king's counsel. So he would torment them. He would bully them. He would stand up to them. And we have Judge Nessa Cahill of the High Court speaking about his relationship with the bench at the conference. We have the Chief Justice chairing a panel. We have the Attorney General, Rosa Fanning, chairing a session, former Attorney General Paul Gallagher. Like, he's celebrated by the bar now.
Yeah.
Because he was the greatest barrister in Irish history. He was someone who had a transformational impact on the law and on the reputation of the bar and of the lawyers. And we're delighted and honoured to do it in partnership with the bar because O'Connell is that great lawyer who had that transformational influence, and his impact at the bar, well, it's massive.
Yeah, and there's a real international flavour. You've got speakers from all over the place coming, haven't you?
Including a Nobel Peace Prize laureate from Ukraine, Alexandra Matchevich, and she's going to talk about, you know, really, I suppose, the war crimes happening in Ukraine, the illegal invasion by Russia, and really about how the legacy of O'Connell still resonates today, because he was the champion of freedom, he was the champion of human rights, and half of the conference is about human rights challenges today, because that's really the best way of honouring O'Connell's legacy. It's not just about him, the man, his era. It's about Ireland and the world today, and we still face the same challenges about freedom, democracy, liberty, about human rights. They're under threat all around the world, and we have to hear about that as well.
Yeah, listen, we've just scratched the surface really there, and if you want to get into it in more detail, of course the most recent episode of Talking History will do so, but more detail again and more debate and discussion on all this and more, Liberty, Democracy and the Struggle for Human Rights, the 29th and 30th of July in Trinity College, Dublin. And if you want to find out more, just Google Daniel O'Connell 250 Conference and you'll be brought to it, or Trinity O'Connell 250 and you'll be brought to it. It's not that complicated. You'll find your way there. Patrick, listen, thanks a million for coming into us. Really appreciate it. Patrick Egan there, presenter of Talking History and involved in all of this because he is the new director of that Trinity Long Room Hub, who are helping to run this alongside the Bar and the Irish Cemeteries Trust and Diageo and others.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.